Men, if you're ready to reclaim your edge, listen up. I used to be held back by constant bathroom trips with multiple wake-ups during my sleep and looking for restrooms whenever I was out. Then I discovered Better Man. After just 2 months, I started experiencing fewer trips to the bathroom, less urge to go, and I even slept through some nights. I feel a noticeable boost in my overall well-being, even sexual stamina. It gives me the freedom and confidence to live life on my terms. Better Man is clinically tested and trusted by thousands of men over 25 years. Ready to take back control? Go to BeBetterNow.com to order your supply today. That's BeBetterNow.com.
These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Use as directed. Individual results may vary.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Monday, April 21st, 2025. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about the 2025 summer movie season. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at SlashFilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film staff writer and box office analyst, Ryan Scott.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
All right, Ryan, before we get into this, I wanted to share a quick email response we got about last Monday's episode where we talked about the biggest problems facing the world of movies these days. Eric from Los Angeles wrote in and said, I would like to know why movie theaters aren't picking up the baton as a place to buy new and even used DVDs. That seems like a more synergistic thing than axe throwing. And I thought that was a great idea. And I don't think I've ever heard anyone suggest that before. And it kind of seems like a no-brainer to me. Do you have a response to that, Ryan?
The only thing I can think that's even sort of like that is one of the Alamo Drafthouse locations out here in Austin has like a video rental component where they got like this library from a video store that closed down and you can like, you know, rent movies from them basically, which is kind of cool. It's like a tiny little Blockbuster style thing in their lobby. But yeah, I mean, I think things like that, especially because there was like a recent report that I read that like CDs are oddly now making a comeback, sort of like vinyl did a while ago. And I have to imagine that on a long enough timeline, or probably not even that long, the same thing's probably gonna happen with like DVD, Blu-ray, whatever, because I think that the generation coming up behind us is getting a little fed up with the we don't own anything concept. Like everything's a subscription model. Everything's a, you know, you just rent everything permanently. So I have to imagine that just like you can sell t-shirts in a lobby, you can sell popcorn buckets, you can sell cups, you can sell all these things. If you had like a Walmart style weird assortment of DVDs or maybe even like movies tied to like anything popular that's out, like you could have Timothée Chalamet DVDs tied to like the release of Wonka, for, you know, or whatever. I don't know. Like it does seem like a decent idea. It's just a matter of, could these theaters justify the space? Because that's one of the biggest issues with physical media, is that that's why Best Buy stopped selling it. That's why Target stopped selling it. The retail space that is needed for those things couldn't justify, you know, you could put other like money makers in those spaces. But I do think it's a conceptually good idea, and it's something I would like to see, and it's something I would probably end up spending money on, frankly.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in my local theater in Florida, there's a lot of empty floor space there. And like, I understand maybe not wanting to put something along a whole wall or whatever, because you have to put up posters for upcoming releases and you want to drive people to return to theaters. But I think there's definitely an opportunity there. So I'm just surprised that I've never heard anyone suggest that. So I thought that was a great idea from Eric. So
it is. And I think like, even if you just had like, you know, with certain art house theaters, like if you just had like a, make a deal with Criterion, make a little mini Criterion closet in the, you know, like we have
exactly.
We have this theater downtown in Austin called the Violet Crown, which is a beautiful, very cool little art house style theater. But I can only imagine if you just had this tiny little area tucked away where, again, you just like your little Criterion closet, people just for the sake of doing it would probably buy something. So, you know, it's like, I don't mean to over pitch ideas here, but it seems like a good idea. And it wouldn't surprise me if something like this starts happening.
Yeah. Okay, so let's get into what we're really here to talk about, which is the summer movie season at the box office. So longtime listeners know that every year we convene and do this and just kind of look ahead and talk about potential box office prospects of upcoming movies. And really, Ryan, this is more for me to kind of get excited about what's coming out. And hopefully that provides the same service to our listeners as well, for people who maybe are too busy to lock in and look ahead 3 or 4 months at the release calendar. So we're just going to run through all the major releases coming out from, I think May 2nd is when we're going to start this, the first weekend of May. And then we'll go through August 29th and just talk about, yeah, the biggest movies that are coming out and kind of what we think they might, how they might perform and things like that. This is a familiar formula for those who have been listening for a while. So why don't we kick things off, Ryan, by talking about Thunderbolts, which is the movie that I think officially kicks off the summer this year. What are you thinking about this one right now?
So I'm of two minds about this. And what's unlike a lot of the movies we're going to talk about today, we actually have some numbers for Thunderbolts. So I'm very excited about Thunderbolts. I believe you were there that day, Ben, when this news broke just before Comic-Con that they were making a Thunderbolts movie. And I, in our Slash Film Slack, was like, oh, man, they're making a Thunderbolts movie? And pretty much everyone else was like, what is Thunderbolts? And I was like the one guy who was like, hell yeah, let's go. And I don't know. I hope the movie's good. Rumor is that it is quite good. But we did, at the end of last week, get some actual early box office tracking for this movie. So it's
We should mention we're recording this on April 14th. So if anything happens in the interim with updated numbers or whatever, I just want to put a timestamp on that's where we are. That's why we're recording this a little bit early.
Oh, yeah, fair enough. But yeah, so as of this writing, we did get some early tracking, which is looking between anywhere between $63 and $77 million. So it's kind of looking at a median of around 70. Which is going to be right in like Eternals territory, which Eternals opened to $71 million, finished with barely over $400 million worldwide. So on the surface, that doesn't sound good. However, as I pointed out, like with stuff like this in the MCU, it's all about word of mouth at this point, particularly. So basically, if this is like an Eternals level response where it's very mixed and people are meh about it, yeah, maybe it finishes closer to 400 worldwide. But if you look at other movies in the MCU that really sort of, you know, had a similar opening, like Doctor Strange opened to $85 million and finished with 677 worldwide. Thunderbolts could easily blow past that $70 million projection because, as we know, box office tracking is not super reliable in these early, in recent years. So there is absolutely a path for this movie to do well, and that path completely runs through, is it good? Does it get that must-see tag? Can audiences drive this thing beyond opening weekend? That is the full story here. If it gets that wait to stream label, if people kind of shrug it off, it's probably in Captain America Brave New World territory, and we suddenly have a lot more questions about the future of Marvel. So we'll see.
Yeah. Okay. So speaking of good movies, this is one that the next one that I wanted to talk about is one that you've actually seen, which is called Clown in a Cornfield. It's going to be a pretty small movie, especially when you compare it to something like Thunderbolts. But I was just wondering if this one was on your radar in terms of this conversation, Ryan.
It absolutely is. And if you guys didn't know, I saw Clown in a Cornfield at South by Southwest this year. It is a comedic slasher from the same director of Tucker and Dale versus Evil. I should point out that right now, Mr. Eli Craig's movie has a 93% approval rating on Rotten Tomatoes. It is getting gangbusters reviews. So here's what I will say. Thunderbolts entering its second weekend. There's no big, you know, movie in May 10th of last year. The same weekend we had Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. So you have nothing that big. But Clown in a Cornfield could easily play as counter-programming against something like Thunderbolts. And if that word of mouth really translates, I think this is a movie that could overperform against expectations. Now, what does that mean? Does it mean like $50 million? Of course not, but could it mean like an extra $10 million? Easily, in my eyes. So I think that's one that could surprise. I don't want to oversell it, but I do think that that's one that has a good hook. The trailer's good. Buzz is good. That one could do some business.
Well, one thing I guess they might be slightly concerned about is that there's another horror movie coming up the following weekend in the form of Final Destination Bloodlines, which comes out on May 16th. So that potentially could cannibalize some of the audience there. Definitely has the people who are interested in both of those are probably in the middle of that same Venn diagram, you know?
Yeah. And also, I guess we should probably talk about it since you brought it up. Final Destination Bloodlines that trailer is now, I believe, per Deadline's counting, was the second most viewed horror trailer ever, next to It Chapter 2, I believe.
Wow.
Or is one of the most. So it racked up an insane amount of... So there is tremendous excitement for that movie. I believe that is going to be one of the biggest overperformers of the summer, especially if it's good. Like, if the reviews come out and that movie's good, that is going to make a bunch of money. Currently, I think the early sort of estimates have it around like $30 million opening weekend. I believe, personally, this is just me guessing. I could look silly. Who knows? I believe it's going to do way, way, way. I'm going to throw one more way on there. Way more money than that. I think that's going to be the overperformer of the summer.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I really hope that works out, because that looks like a really, really fun movie, a really interesting return to a very beloved franchise.
Absolutely.
Another movie that's coming out on May 16th is called Hurry Up Tomorrow, which I think is going to be so small and kind of like a nothing release that it's probably not even worth talking about. I just wanted to mention it real quick. It's The Weeknd's new movie. I think they played some footage at CinemaCon this year, and it confused a lot of the moviegoers there that I saw, or a lot of the press members and stuff.
Isn't
there
Jenna Ortega in that as well?
She is, but like, it's coming out as we record this a little over a month from now, and there's just has not really been a big marketing push for it. I'm guessing this will fall through the cracks for a lot of kind of average moviegoers, which is like the group that you need to turn something into a massive hit.
For sure. Yeah, that's a weird one, just because Jenna Ortega is one of those people I do believe actually has meaningful star power. I agree with you, it's going to largely fall through the cracks, but I'd be surprised. That might be a test of how much her name actually means. Be interesting to see what happens there.
Yeah. Okay, so you and I are looking at two slightly different lists here, so I'm just going to run through what's on mine, but feel free to jump in and mention anything that I don't mention, so don't let me move on if there's something else you wanted to talk about.
Sure.
But that being said, I think the next thing on my list is May 23rd. We have two big movies opening, Lilo and Stitch and Mission Impossible: The Final Reckoning. So where are you thinking about those in terms of this whole conversation?
Well, this lines up with May 24th of last year, which was Gar Furiosa, if you will, which is when you had Furiosa and the Garfield movie open. Garfield movie did fine. Furiosa massively underperformed against expectations. That ended up being one of those pretty disappointing weekends, you know, and kind of a rough year last year. But I think, as you and I have talked about a lot on this podcast, I believe Lilo and Stitch is another one of those ones that people just are not paying enough attention to. I think this is going to be massive, massive, massive. I think that the nostalgia cycle has really caught up with this one. I cannot believe how much like Lilo and Stitch merch I see out in the wild even before this movie is out, and not even tied to the live action movie, just like classic Lilo and Stitch. So I think that, you know, as long as the reviews are at least okay, like I don't even think the reviews have to be great. Like if audiences are just sort of on board for this one, I think it does huge business. You know, like $100 million or more type potential business opening weekend. So,
yeah.
And then you also have Mission Impossible, which these are two huge movies. Yes. But this to me really is like Wicked and Gladiator 2 opening on the same weekend, where you are just going for such different audiences here that this is very good counter programming and very good, like two big movies that can occupy the same space. Plus you have what happened with Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning, where they weren't available, you know, to get IMAX screens. They're able to get their IMAX screens this time. So that's going to help this movie a lot. You're sort of billing it as The Final Reckoning rather than a part two. I think that might help get you some business there. I like this double bill, and I'm curious to see how it plays out.
Okay. So the next double feature I have here on my calendar is on May 30th, the following week, and we have Karate Kid Legends and Bring Her Back. And Bring Her Back is the new horror movie from A24, and I think it's the Philippou brothers who directed Talk to Me.
Yep.
Yes. So Karate Kid Legends is, from my understanding, I've not seen any of Cobra Kai, but from my understanding, it's supposed to be kind of a cross-generational thing that brings in Ralph Macchio, Daniel LaRusso, and also Jackie Chan from the 2010 Karate Kid movie, and also maybe ties up some loose ends or something from the Cobra Kai universe. So in theory, there's a lot of interest there. They've put out a couple trailers for this one. I'm not fully sold on it, but again, I'm maybe not the, as somebody who has not seen Cobra Kai, I'm not like the exact right in the target demo there. But what do you think about both of these, Ryan?
Bring her back. I just feel like there isn't as much buzz on this one as there was like Talk to Me, but mm-hmm. Talk to Me ended up being such a surprise breakout hit that it wouldn't surprise me to have that one do well, especially because by that point you're going to be a couple of weeks removed from Final Destination. So there could be room for a horror movie there. Good counter programming. Karate Kid is one that I'm so curious about because I don't care about those movies. I remember my fiance was watching Cobra Kai for a bit, and this was at like peak, you know, people's fever of that show. And I watched a couple episodes with her and I was like, this is like some low grade C. I'm so sorry to people of that show. It felt like low grade CW stuff to me. Like I couldn't believe that was the show that people were going nuts about. That having been said, that trailer is really good. That Karate Kid Legends trailer, the most recent one, is really good. Like even as someone who has no feeling whatsoever for this franchise, I was like, hey, that's a good trailer. And that like almost got me interested somehow. And I have to imagine if you have any connection to that universe, like what that trailer would do for you. It feels like a potential dark horse to me. I would hesitate to put, you know, like a number on it, but it's one of those things where the original Karate Kid was a big hit. Yes, people know that. However, people kind of forget that 2010 Karate Kid movie did $360 million worldwide on a $40 million budget. So, you know, if they kept the budget somewhat reasonable here, there is absolutely an audience for this movie.
Okay. All right. So something to look forward to at the end of May. So transitioning into June, we kick things off with Ballerina and the Phoenician Scheme on June 6th. So Ballerina is the Ana de Armas starring John Wick spinoff. The Phoenician Scheme is Wes Anderson's newest movie that stars Benicio del Toro and Michael Cera and a bunch of other people. Again, another counter-programming type of thing here. Again, like, I mean, yes, there is probably a cinephile right in the middle of that Venn diagram, but ostensibly on paper, that looks like pretty two pretty different audiences, right?
Well, that, and you also have you have Life of Chuck, the neon Stephen King movie, which is getting all kinds of buzz. That's a potential, like, best picture type movie. But Neon waited, held on to that, and decided to go in summer. They have a tremendous amount of confidence in that movie. So this, to me, is one of those overcrowded weekends. Because you also have, not that it's going to do much, but you have that weird Jai Courtney horror movie Dangerous Animals coming out that weekend, which actually looks like a lot of fun. Please go watch the trailer for that. But then you also have, going to Hulu that weekend, Predator Killer of Killers, which is the animated Predator movie from Prey director Dan Trachtenberg. I do believe that's a movie people are going to want to watch, and I do believe that there are going to be some people who are going to stay home to watch that. So, do I believe Ballerina is going to do business? Yes. Purely dependent on reviews, I think, partially, because that title is so bad now. You know, they have it from the world of John Wick, Ballerina. It's not a good title. but those movies, the thing about the John Wick movies is every single one of them made more than the previous one. It's one of the only franchises ever to do that. So even, you know, half of what John Wick 4 made is a lot of money. So that's, you know, potentially, you know, call it a $40 million opener, maybe. Phoenician Scheme, who knows? That's expanding that weekend. You know, Asteroid City made $50 million worldwide. So you're not talking about a massive commercial threat, but you could have a $10 million weekend or something, you know, which is, again, that's good counter programming. But I think opening that the same weekend as something as Life of Chuck, that to me is where you get a little fuzzy, because that feels like those are going for similar audiences. So that's one of those overcrowded weekends, I would say.
Okay. So next up, I have Materialists, which is the new romantic comedy from Celine Song, who wrote and directed Past Lives. And this one stars Dakota Johnson and Chris Evans and Pedro Pascal. And then also How to Train Your Dragon, the live action version from DreamWorks, opens on June 13th as well. So that one, I think, is just going to dominate. I mean, they've already announced the second movie is in the works in terms of a live action remake as well. They clearly have a lot of faith in that. They showed the whole thing to audiences at CinemaCon. Studios don't do that unless they know that they have the goods there. Like I saw Top Gun Maverick at CinemaCon because they knew that they had a gigantic hit on their hands. So I think the same thing probably is going to apply to How to Train Your Dragon. What do you think about both of these, Ryan?
So I think How to Train Your Dragon is going to make a ridiculous amount of money. Probably like Alice in Wonderland territory opening weekend, like $116 million opening weekend. Could easily see that sort of thing. It has become a generational favorite. And the word from CinemaCon, even from very cynical people who were not like, who were like, why are they doing this in live action? Word is very good. It's apparently a very good movie. And if sort of hard-nosed critics who were kind of meh on the idea are saying that, I can only imagine that your average moviegoer is going to fall in love with it. Family movie, IMAX, gangbusters. Materialist feels like the kind of movie that could make some money, but it feels like it does feel like counter-programming, yes, but it also just feels like it could just get lost in the shuffle there. I really don't know. That feels like it would be like a better fall movie for me, but you know, maybe like a September release when in September, when we're like, where have all the movies gone? It feels like something that could go there, but I don't know. We'll have to see. I'm curious to see how that one shakes out. I think at this point, How to Train Your Dragon is all but assured to be a hit. It's just a matter of how much of a hit. Whereas Materialist is the kind of thing that could be a hit in the right place. I don't know if this is the right place for it.
Yeah. So I was just looking at How to Train Your Dragon's box office totals, and it looks like it made a little under $500 million worldwide, the first movie. But since then, there have been two other films and a lot of time for that nostalgia to get baked in. So do you think the live action version has a chance of making a billion?
I really hesitate because like when you want, let me say this first off, I think me and a few other people that do what I do, the box office analysis stuff, really like a lot of us agree that like, you got to stop getting away from that idea that $1 billion equals success in the realm of blockbuster filmmaking. And that's sort of become this weird thing that people have come to expect. And so I don't like sort of hinging that as like the idea of let's view a billion as the mark for success. Is it possible? Absolutely. You know, in a world where, you know, Beauty and the Beast made $1.6 billion, or was it 1.3? Basically $1.3 billion. Lion King made $1.6 billion. Absolutely, it's possible. You know, when 2019's Aladdin sort of limped to a billion, like, it's absolutely possible. Do I think it's going to happen? I don't know. I think, like, in my head right now, like, it feels like the kind of movie that can limp to 500 and get to 750 relatively easily if word is good. A billion does feel like a ceiling for it, but I've been surprised by other things in the past, so who knows?
Okay, so just four more movies to talk about before we take a break. So on June 20th, there's the double punch of 28 Years Later and Elio, the new movie from Pixar. 28 Years Later, obviously bringing Danny Boyle back to that franchise that he and Alex Garland started all those years ago. Alex Garland is back to write the screenplay for this one. It's supposed to be the start of a new trilogy of 28 years, days, months, whatever movies in that same franchise. So what do you think about these?
I should also note that currently, I don't know whether it's going to stay there, but the new Rebel Wilson comedy Brideheart is also supposedly set to open that weekend. Again, making for a kind of crowded weekend, I would say. 28 years later, again, like that trailer was viewed an ungodly amount of times. I think that's another one where there's been enough time for people to really love those movies. I'm bullish on 28 years later. I'm very, very bullish. Probably like I could see it doing 50 million opening weekend relatively easily if word is good on it. I'm not the best prognosticator, but like that's in my head. I could see that sort of thing. A big budget horror is always tough. This was apparently a pretty expensive movie. One of the most appealing things about horror generally is that it's, you know, made on the cheap and, you know, low risk, high reward. Well, this is a kind of high risk proposition, so we'll see. As for Elio, that's the one I'm more curious about because 28 years later is going to be fine in the long run. Probably it's horror. It's, you know, the audience is built in sort of franchise, blah, blah, blah. Elio is an original from Pixar and, you know, Inside Out 2 did huge business last year. That was very, very important. Helped ensure that Pixar is going to stay a theatrical brand, We all know about the very miraculous turnaround by Elemental in, you know, 2023 after a very soft opening weekend. I feel like buzz is just, there's no buzz on Elio right now whatsoever. And I just like Pixar original needs to break out at some point. Like it, a Pixar original really needs to just break out in a meaningful way. And I hope that can be Elio, but I don't know. But I will say though, so you got How to Train Your Dragon live action. So then Elio is the only animated game in town for, is that the only, I mean, until August? So I think
the Smurfs movie comes out in July.
I'm still going to go ahead and say the only animated game in town until, until August. But yeah, so I think that, that could have a lot of runway there. But I'm a little nervous, but I'm hopeful. I care deeply about Pixar as a haven for original cinema. And I just hope that that can continue.
Yeah, I've been on the record as being a little iffy on this one. All the trailers and stuff have not really done anything for me. I really want to like this movie, but I don't know. It could just be a case where, like the original Frozen movie, I remember hating the trailers for those and loving the movie. So it very well just could be a case of the marketing not being designed to pull me in, because I'm not the most important audience they're going for there.
And also an example of a movie that I don't think those trailers did a lot. And that movie made like well over $1 billion. So,
yeah,
you know, like here's hoping, right?
Yeah, best case scenario for sure. Right. Okay, so as we get into the end of June here on June 27th, we have F1 and Megan 2.0. So F1 is the new racing movie starring Brad Pitt from Joseph Kosinski, who directed Top Gun Maverick. Megan 2.0, I think, is the same filmmakers, a lot of the same folks behind the first Megan coming back. And it looks more like Terminator 2 than a traditional sequel, which I thought was an interesting direction to take this franchise, this sort of burgeoning franchise. But I don't know, Ryan, it seems to me like it's going to be tough to recapture the same lightning in a bottle memification of the first Megan movie. So I'm not sure if the sequel is going to make as much, but that's just me, you know, somebody who doesn't pay very much attention to box office stuff from this far out. What are you thinking about that one, you know, as we sit here in the middle of April?
I have many thoughts about it. It's worth remembering that the first Megan made $180 million worldwide, and I think it only had like a $12 million budget. So that's, you know, classic Blumhouse working very well. My sense is that Megan 2.0 was a much more expensive movie. But my sense is also that Blumhouse is insanely high on this because they have a spinoff in the works too. That, you know, so they believe in this franchise. I think if you can just tap into that same thing a little bit, like if the movie's good, you have a pretty big automatic audience for the movie. And if it is good, I think you're safe. I'd hesitate to guess what that opening weekend number could be, because it is coming, you know, after 28 years later, before another monster that we're about to talk about. I worry it might get lost in the shuffle. The first Megan was a January movie where there just wasn't any competition. So, you know, that's an important distinguishing factor there. As far as like F1 being direct competition for it, I don't necessarily think so. That's a whole other beast. We could spend a lot of time talking about F1 because from what I've heard, they basically had to reshoot like enormous chunks of that movie because of the strikes and because they made all these, my understanding is, I might have this slightly wrong, but they apparently had a bunch of brand deals, you know, because they were filming on actual F1 tracks and stuff, but those deals change annually for like any sporting event. And then because of the delay, they had to kind of, all those deals that they made sort of expired. So they ended up spending a fortune to essentially reshoot enormous chunks of this movie. I have not seen an official budget, but rumored reports have suggested that the you know, from semi-reputable places, suggested that the budget's like $300 million, if not more. So, I mean, you know, and this is an Apple movie. So Apple is right now happy to keep investing in these big movies, but for them to keep putting them in theaters and to keep spending these massive sums of money, I think something has to work at some point on like a big commercial scale. you know, you got Brad Pitt, you got the director of Top Gun Maverick. I think they hoped this could be it, but I think the money just got away from them. So I am fascinated to see what happens with F1, but I think that's also coming kind of at a weird time where it's going to get sandwiched between some other monsters here, which we'll talk about in a minute. But that's an interesting weekend for big risks, I guess, is what I would say.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, but I think it could run the risk of being maybe a little bland as a movie overall. And like, is the kind of interesting camera work that Joseph Kosinski does in terms of like strapping cameras to fast moving vehicles, is that going to be enough to convince Joe Blow moviegoer who only goes to see two movies a year or something to spend their hard earned cash on that being, you know, maybe an IMAX or like a premium large format experience or something to really get the most of that experience? I don't know. It remains to be seen, but I kind of like, I'm torn between having doubts about it and also thinking it could be one of the biggest movies of the summer. So I agree.
I'm really don't know, you know, what, but I'm with you. I'm so curious to see where that goes.
Okay, let's take a break and then we'll come back and talk about July and August.
Your child has so much potential, but your local schools may not be right for them. Check out K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited tuition-free online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
All right, so let's talk about Jurassic World Rebirth. That kicks off July, on July 2nd. That's obviously going to be a massive movie. I mean, I think, did every single movie in the Jurassic World trilogy clear $1 billion? I know you're talking about you didn't want to use that as a benchmark. But
yeah, Jurassic World Dominion, despite being as bad as it was, and I say this as someone who was unapologetically in love with this franchise as a whole, barely cleared $1 billion. And mind you, that was also in 2022, and there was still a little bit more like pandemic recovery going on. So, but yeah, like these movies have all made tremendous, tremendous amounts of money. So, but I also think that there is that important caveat that Dominion was not well received by critics or audiences alike. So I think that Jurassic World Rebirth has some answering to do. But I also think that opening weekend, I mean, you know, if you want to look at the past three movies, Jurassic World, $208 million opening weekend, Fallen Kingdom, $148 million opening weekend, Dominion, $145 million opening weekend. I mean, this is guaranteed to be at least $100 million opening weekend, plus the IMAX, plus all this stuff. If the movie's good, who knows? One of the biggest movies of the summer, if not one of the biggest worldwide releases of 2025, if it goes well. I don't know what else to say right now, but if it's a good movie, it's going, it's very good shot at $1 billion.
Okay, so then the next one that I have on my list, and let me know if I'm missing anything, is Superman on July 11th. And that's definitely a make or break movie for Warner Brothers. We've talked about that a lot on the podcast recently. And it's going to launch the whole DC universe. I mean, technically, Creature Commandos already did, but just in terms of the big screen component of it, there's just so much riding on this movie's shoulders. So what do you think, Ryan? I'm going to ask you to like really put a number on this or go on a limb and really like give me a hard prediction here.
Okay, hard prediction. And again, I'm going to be happy to be look wrong about this later. I think we're pretty much going to wind up in almost like identical Man of Steel territory, where it has a pretty good opening weekend. Man of Steel made basically $668 million worldwide. Maybe James Gunn's Superman falls a little short of that just because of, you know, current situation, whatever. So it winds up in a situation where you probably have a $200 million movie that makes good money, but not like, you know, $1 billion, we can build an entire universe on the back of this hit type money. So then you're in a situation where Warner Brothers then has to hope that that, you know, $600 million can then, you know, get enough people to go see Supergirl the next summer and make at least equivalent money. Because if you spend $200 million on a movie, you kind of have to make $600 million. You know what I mean? Like, you then wind up in a situation where the next thing is uncertain because the first thing wasn't certain enough. Does that make sense?
It does. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it'll do well, but I think it's also not going to be like that well enough where you just can have blind confidence going into the next couple of projects. That would be my best guess.
Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate you putting yourself out there. You know, we'll see what happens. I hope it's like, you know, a runaway success, just because I feel like theaters would be grateful for that. And certainly Warner Brothers as a studio would be.
Yeah. That having been said, doubting James Gunn seems stupid. You know, like the man turned Guardians of the Galaxy into a multi-billion dollar franchise. So, and he's one of my favorite filmmakers, bar none, working today. So I have every belief it's going to be very good, but we'll see.
Okay, so on July 18th, we have I Know What You Did Last Summer and the Smurfs movie. I don't really know what to say about either of these. I'm kind of disappointed that these are the big options being offered to moviegoers in the middle of the summer. But there we have it.
I have different feelings about that. I think Smurfs, probably Garfield movie type money, where they probably made it cheap. And if it can do, you know, 15 million opening weekend, they'll probably be fine. I Know What You Did Last Summer is an interesting one, because you've had this slasher revival craze now with, like, you know, Halloween and some of these other movies. And like, I just don't know, is there enough juice on I Know What You Did Last Summer to be one of those movies? Can it make 25, 30 million opening weekend? Like, do people care enough about it? I actually don't know. I'm curious. I like the original. I'm in the bag for this. Do other people feel like I do? I don't know. This one I'm so curious about. I don't know what they spent on it. I'm assuming they probably kept it, you know, 50 million or less, but we'll see. This is one of the ones I'm so fascinated by, to be like, you know, is there actually like an audience for this as a slasher revival in, you know, 2025?
Or is it just another scraping the bottom of the barrel IP choice? So I think
that's the other option, but I'm actually curious to which side of the line it falls on, because I'm not super sure.
Well, July is going to be a big month regardless, because you got Jurassic World Rebirth, you got Superman, and then wrapping up the month we have the Fantastic Four First Steps on July 25th. And talk about another movie that feels like it has the weight of the world on its shoulders. That's another one that's, I feel like, regardless of how Thunderbolts does, all eyes are going to be on this movie in terms of gauging where the Marvel Cinematic Universe is going moving forward, and kind of taking the temperature of how audiences care or don't care about that whole monster franchise as it stands right now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. There was a time where if you had said we're finally getting a Fantastic Four reboot within the confines of the MCU, it would have limped to $1 billion. Like, now it's weird that something so big feels so uncertain. Because the Fantastic Four is the last major Marvel property that has yet to have a really solid adaptation. Like, there are tons of Marvel heroes people like, but the Fantastic Four is Marvel's first family. This is a big deal. And it is truly interesting that we feel so uncertain about it. Like, this is one of those movies that has to make, you know, at least like 600 million worldwide, truly, to make Marvel feel comfortable, I think. It also looks tremendously expensive. Like, it looks very... I was like, I think if Thunderbolts doesn't work out, you can chalk that up to, well, it's B-list heroes, it's a team nobody knows anything about, it's this, it's that. Fantastic Four is Fantastic Four. It's a big name. Can you do something with Fantastic Four, or can you not? That is really, really important here. And, you know, these characters are coming back for Avengers Doomsday. That's important. And look, I know this is going to sound stupid, but also happening that weekend, Happy Gilmore 2 arrives on Netflix. You can laugh all you want. I think a lot of people are going to be staying home to watch that movie. I think that is going to be a generational thing. People are going to want to watch that. I don't necessarily know if there's crossover with the audience. I'm not saying you can't do two things in one weekend, but I do think that that is at least something to be aware of.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's fascinating. Maybe I should have tried to pull up Netflix's calendar for all the big releases that they're having this summer too, because I think that's an interesting point. I think that really isn't talked about enough when we talk about stuff like this, and especially in episodes like these where we're looking ahead and talking about predictions. And there's so much that is kind of like unquantifiable in terms of impact and all of that. But like, I think that is an important data point, at least to have in your back pocket of like, okay, this could be a potential reason if a movie like that were to underperform and Netflix would release something saying Happy Gilmore 2 is one of the biggest movies in Netflix original movie history or something. Like, I think you can kind of, draw that correlation there. But hopefully that doesn't happen. And like you said, people will be able to do two things at one in one weekend. So I think, yeah, we're in the final stretch here into August. So just one more month to go. On August 1st, I have The Naked Gun, which I thought was a remake, but actually is a sequel of sorts because Liam Neeson plays Leslie Nielsen's character's son in the movie.
Yeah.
The trailer came out for that not too long ago. It looks very funny. And I think it's Akiva Schaffer from The Lonely Island is directing that. And then The Bad Guys 2 opens on August 1st as well. And that first movie made a pretty decent chunk of change, I think. I mean, I don't have the numbers in front of me.
Yeah, it was sort of a sleeper where it made a little bit of money opening weekend, but then it just rolled and rolled and rolled and rolled and rolled and, you know, just ended up becoming kind of a sleeper hit. But it's also one of those things where it was made cheaply, right? Like Universal has gotten really good at making these animated movies on the cheap. Just for context, The Bad Guys opened to $24 million. It ended up making just shy of $100 million domestic, but it made $250 million worldwide. So it just kind of slow rolled its way to becoming a hit. But I think that this is going to be one of those things where the sequel makes a fair amount more than its predecessor.
Okay. So what do you think about Naked Gun? Because I think Brad and I have mentioned that on the podcast before. Like, they just aren't really making mainstream studio comedies at the rate that they used to. So does this movie, despite how kind of silly the trailer makes it out to look, does this movie actually have a lot of weight on its shoulders in terms of like showing studios, hey, this kind of thing could still work, or this could be like a make or break moment for mainstream studio comedies? What do you think about that?
Like, I think there's a chance it's like Pop Star Never Stop Stopping, where you have a great movie that makes $10 million, or you have, like, I think it's obviously gonna make a little more than $10 million, but it's like, I don't want to say quite like Barbie level surprise, but I could see a world where it makes a fortune, you know, like we're, you know, Seth MacFarlane, I've talked about it a fair amount on this podcast, but like Ted, do yourself a favor, go back and look at how much money Ted made. You will never believe how much money a talking bear comedy made. We were just truly living in a different time. For the record, it's well over $500 million. And that still blows my mind to this day. so like, I just don't know. I honestly, like, I know, like, saying I don't know is boring as the box office analyst. When I tell you, like, the degree to which I feel uncertain about this movie, it is of maybe anything we're talking about today, I just have no earthly idea. You know, it's the one I would want to bet on the least. I'll put it that way.
Mm. Well, I personally am holding out hope because I think it looks great, and I hope that it does really well and convinces studios to invest in bringing mainstream comedies back to theaters.
I mean, I think
there's like a real want, a real desire for, for that kind of thing.
I agree. And also, like, the trailer's very funny. It's a brave trailer. Like, the last joke in that trailer is good, you know, and Liam Neeson is, I mean, it's perfect casting. I mean, it truly, truly is perfect, perfect casting. So I'm very hopeful. Fingers are firmly crossed, but I just don't know.
Okay, so on August 8th, we have Weapons, which is the new movie from Zach Cregger, who directed Barbarian a couple years ago, and then Freakier Friday, which is the Disney sequel that is reuniting Lindsay Lohan and Jamie Lee Curtis. So what do you think about these?
A perfect example on paper of good counter-programming. Weapons is maybe one of my most anticipated movies of the year. Barbarian was my very favorite movie of the year when it came out. You talk about a studio that is high on a filmmaker based on, you know, one movie. So not only does he have Weapons coming out, he's getting a huge payday to make the new Resident Evil movie, which is coming out next year, you know. So I'm very much looking forward to this. And I think that it runs very well as a counter to Freakier Friday, which is another movie that's sort of like Lilo and Stitch in my mind, where I actually think it could make pretty good money. I don't, you know, not like $1 billion money, but, you know, maybe a $300 to $400 million global hit if things go really well for it, perhaps. You know, that kind of movie. Weapons, I'm not really sure. I don't know the scale of it. I don't really know. Is it like a big thing that could, you know, have mass appeal, or is it like Barbarian Plus? I'm still not super sure about that, but I'll be curious to see. It looks like they're just starting to market that one. So I don't know. That's one that I could could be anywhere from a $75 million movie to a $300 million movie. Like, I really don't know, depending on the scale of it. So we'll see.
Yeah, I think by the time audiences listeners are hearing this episode, the trailer will have come out, but you and I have not seen that yet. So, take that into consideration. I think Freak Your Friday could be, you're talking about a sleeper earlier. I think that could be one that people underestimate. It seems like every year there's always something that people just kind of don't give enough attention to. And it tends to be either like, women focused or like black audiences come out in huge numbers something. And I think Freak Your Friday could be that movie where people are just like, oh yeah, it's another Disney sequel, whatever. But I think there might be like a quiet amount of generational love for that movie. And it could be something that gets like three generations of women to go see it in theaters. And like, you know, it could be like a kind of a breakout hit.
Like you said, women focused, it has like in a very different way. It has like, It Ends With Us vibes. Where like it's just like nobody's talking about it, and then just it's just gonna blow up.
Yeah. So. Okay, so that's August 8th, and then on August 15th, the only thing I have written down that I think might be like potentially notable is Nobody 2, which I don't know, man. Like I wasn't really a big fan of that first movie with Bob Odenkirk
really?
That came out a few years ago. Yeah, I appreciate the concept. I like the idea of like, oh yeah, cool. I love Bob Odenkirk. Let's give him his own kind of Taken or John Wick style movie or whatever. I just thought the execution of that first film was just kind of lackluster, and it just kind of left me, I haven't really thought about it once since I saw it, you know? So I'm not really excited about a sequel because I didn't really love the first movie, but I wonder how well did that first film do? Do you have those numbers in front of you?
Just for the record, it's become a comfort movie for me. I've watched it like 6 or 7 times. I actually love Nobody. It made $57 million worldwide on a $16 million budget in kind of COVID-heavy times. So my understanding is it's also been kind of a VOD and streaming monster. It's done very well. Again, most of those numbers are not available to us, but apparently it's done extremely well on secondary markets. So this is one that I think could, if that is true, if it is true that that movie has stayed for a few years as a streaming staple and done very well on VOD, this could very much be a John Wick to John Wick Chapter 2 situation where, you know, Nobody, the first one makes $57 million worldwide, and then the second one clears $100 million, you know, like where it just makes a lot more money than its predecessor. It could also go the other way where, you know, people have the wait to stream mentality and, you know, it makes like $25 million and then, you know, has to rely on VOD. It's another one where that feels like a coin flip scenario to me. If the trailer's really good, you know, blah blah, we'll see. But that one really does feel like a coin flip to me. I'm dying to see it, but I'm not really sure where it's going to land commercially.
Okay, so the last two films on my list here are The Roses, which comes out on August 29th, which is Searchlight Pictures is releasing this. Tony McNamara is the guy behind The Favorite and Poor Things. He's the screenwriter of those movies. He wrote this film. Jay Roach, who did the Austin Powers films, is directing this. And it's a remake or sort of a readaptation of the novel The War of the Roses, and Benedict Cumberbatch and Olivia Colman are in this, Andy Samberg, Allison Janney, Kate McKinnon. It's got a great cast, but it just kind of feels like one of those movies that's aimed at adults that like I always say, oh man, I wish we had movies like this, and then people just do not show up for it and don't care. That's just my gut feeling based on very little, but that's what I feel like might happen with this one. And then that's going up against a film called Caught Stealing, which, if that release date holds, is the new film from Darren Aronofsky.
Yes.
And it stars Austin Butler and Zoe Kravitz. Matt Smith is in it. Vincent D'Onofrio is in it. Regina King is in it. It's based on a book, and it's about a former baseball player who finds himself immersed in criminality in New York in the 1990s. So, kind of a cool, down and gritty Darren Aronofsky movie. So,
what I believe you're missing that weekend is the Toxic Avenger remake is finally coming out.
That's right. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So, I think that's the obvious winner that weekend, oddly enough. I think, in the era of Terrifier becoming a bona fide blockbuster franchise, I believe a gross Toxic Avenger movie can have its day in the sun. And I actually think, I'm not saying it's going to make $100 million or anything, but I'm saying, you know, I think that that could be another one of those like dark horse sleeper potential hits, at the end of the summer here. I think Caught Stealing and the Roses are, Caught Stealing is purely trailer dependent. I think that could be something that maybe catches people's attention. Like, you know, The Amateur just made $15 million this past weekend. Like, I didn't expect it to do that well, so Caught Stealing could do that sort of thing. The Roses feels like one of those ones that is really fighting a bit of an uphill battle, probably going to be an Oscar-type movie, but, you know, commercially, who knows? So it's going to be kind of a weird note to end the summer on, but I think Toxic Avenger is one I'm deeply curious about.
Yeah, and Peter Dinklage is playing the Toxic Avenger, which is, for those who don't know, it was a sort of a remake or like a new version of an old trauma, sort of like really, really low budget kind of horror comedy cult classic from the 80s, right? So,
yes.
Yeah. So, okay. So, I guess with all of that said, Ryan, having taken the picture of everything that we can expect in summer 2025, how are you thinking about the summer? Are you like excited about all these movies coming out? Are you kind of on edge because you don't think there are as many hits in here as there potentially could be? Like, what's your vibe as we wrap up this conversation?
I'm somewhat optimistic about it. I feel like what it is that there aren't, I don't think there's a Barbie in here necessarily. I could be wrong about that. But I also think that the it's spread out a little more evenly, where the gap between the biggest movie and everything else isn't going to be so big. I think there could be some sleeper hits in here, some good mid-size hits, several blockbusters that break out. So I feel like it's not going to be a feast or famine summer, which is exactly what we need. So if it plays out well, that's what I think could happen. And my fingers are crossed for that, because that would be great.
Yeah, it does seem like a pretty healthy spread and kind of like an ideal type of layout, at least from our position now.
Looking at it, it feels like the way a summer schedule should feel, and it leads into a pretty healthy fall, I might add. So you know, here's hoping. I hope that my pessimism in the first part of the year is you know, rewarded with me looking silly. You know, anytime I'm pessimistic on the show about box office stuff, as I've said in the past, all I want to do is be wrong. All I want to do is look stupid. I don't want things to go that way. So please, industry at large, make me look stupid.
Yeah. And I should clarify, like I said, it looks like an ideal summer. Ideally, Ryan, there would be a lot more original films in here, but just in terms of like the realities that we live in terms of the IP era and all that kind of stuff, I think it could look a lot worse. We'll put it that way. So
absolutely.
All right. I think that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. You can find more about pretty much everything we talked about at slashfilm.com. I will try to link to a few things in the show notes. Slashfilm Daily is published every weekday, bringing the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really helps us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thanks so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
Men, if you're ready to reclaim your edge, listen up. I used to be held back by constant bathroom trips, with multiple wake-ups during my sleep and looking for restrooms whenever I was out. Then I discovered Better Man. After just 2 months, I started experiencing fewer trips to the bathroom, less urge to go, and I even slept through some nights. I feel a noticeable boost in my overall well-being, even sexual stamina. It gives me the freedom and confidence to live life on my terms. Better Man is clinically tested and trusted by thousands of men over 25 years. Ready to take back control? Go to BeBetterNow.com to order your supply today. That's BeBetterNow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Use as directed. Individual results may vary.